Welcome to Gay Geek Bizarre Show, episode 97, and it's a Monday, June 4th, 2018. I am Nard.
And this is Ray.
Welcome everyone to Gay Geek Bizarre Show, where we talk about gay news, geek stories, and bizarre topics. Ray, how are you, Ray?
Just fine. How about you, sir?
Pretty good. I just came from an Astros versus Red Sox game last weekend. Did you watch the game at all? On TV,
what?
At least?
What?
Oh, it's sports. That's right. You don't watch sports. Tebow watches sports, doesn't he?
He watches football.
Oh, he doesn't like baseball. Okay. Well, Red Sox won last Saturday, so...
Why do they have Red Sox? Why can't they have White Sox? Why are they going to be so racist?
The White Sox is a different team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a...
Do they have a Yellow Sox?
No, that would be racist.
Oh.
Yeah. You really don't know anything about baseball, do you? You do know the Red Sox at least, though, right? They're from Boston.
Oh, and that's because Mike is from Boston. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. So I was kind of conflicted because... You know, I live in, you know, Houston and Astros, and they won two games already, but then they lost last Saturday, so, yeah, it's kind of hard. Anyway, so what else did we do last weekend? We went to see Upgrade. How do you like Upgrade?
It was okay. It's kind of one of those movies that I'd probably, if I'd known more about it, I'd probably just wait for it to come out on DVD or something. So, I mean, it was interesting, it was fun, but I was just like, $12 to go see a movie, this movie?
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not much effects, it's just really a story.
I mean, it's a good story, and it had a good little twist at the end.
Yeah.
And everything, so, but, I don't know, it's just something I didn't see that I was expecting a little bit better for.
Okay.
But, yeah, so.
Yeah. Well, I was interested about the story because I just saw the trailer a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it was interesting because I like it when people... It's like a Chuck. It's practically like a Chuck. Or who can you compare him to?
It was almost kind of like a different version of Ex Machina.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
Ex Machina? You're right. You're right. Yes.
I mean,
yes,
it has that same kind of feel to it and stuff. Yeah, it just wasn't as good as Ex Machina.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I agree. It's like Ex Machina. Anyway, what do y'all do?
We went to church this weekend. That was about the most exciting thing we did. So, I got to try out my new grill Saturday night. I cooked a bunch of steaks on it, so.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Bunch of steaks already?
Yep, so broke it in good.
Is it a gas grill?
Yeah, it's a gas grill.
It's pretty small. You know, I'm not into big grills myself, but that's what we have. I don't know, I like it like a nice enough size. Does it have a burner on the side?
No, it's just a basic 3-burner grill.
Oh, okay.
No bells and whistles, it's just made to grill stuff.
Yeah, I do like it with the gas grill on the side. Yeah, not gas grill, you know, a stove.
Yeah.
You know, a stove on the side. But, yeah. I guess you only get that if you have a big...
Yeah, that's extras. That costs more money.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's go to our stories. Okay, so this is interesting. Can I take this?
Sure.
Okay, so Pope tells bishops not to accept gay seminarians. According to report, this is from Reuters. Reuters, actually, yeah, we got some stories from Reuters. This is a reputable news source. So, Vatican City, Pope Francis warned Italian bishops this week to vet carefully applicants to the priesthood and reject anyone they suspected might be homosexual, local media reported on Thursday. Keep an eye on the admissions to seminaries. Keep your eyes open. The Pope was quoted as saying by... newspaper La Stampa's Vatican Insider Service. If in doubt, better not let them enter. Wow. This is awful. So the Vatican did not immediately respond to a request for a comment on the remarks, which Vatican Insider and Il Messaggero said were made at a closed-door gathering on Monday. Francis's meeting with the Italian bishops came just a day after a Chilean man who suffered clerical sexual abuse quoted the Pope as telling him in a private conversation that God made him gay and loved him that way. The Vatican declined to comment on the report, which touched off fierce media speculation that Francis was softening the church stance on homosexuality. It has previously condemned homosexuality as an immoral disorder if actively practiced. See, that's the key part, which I have a comment later. So in 2005, the document released under Francis's predecessor, Pope Benedict, the Vatican said the church could admit into the priesthood those who had clearly overcome homosexual tendencies for at least 3 years. All right. So you don't have to be gay for 3 years, although you have some homosexual tendencies. But it said practicing homosexuals and those with deep-seated gay tendencies and those who support a gay culture should be barred. The report comments to the bishops might appease conservatives who have grown alarmed that at the way Francis has dramatically shifted the language of the church has used about homosexuality since his election in 2013. If a person is gay and seeks God and goodwill, who am I to judge? The Pope said in his overseas trip in 2013. In 2016, he said he had ministered to people with unfulfilled homosexual tendencies, as well as homosexuals who were not able to maintain chaste, as the church asked them to. So when a person arrives before Jesus, Jesus clearly will not say, "Go away because you are a homosexual," he said. Pope Benedict wrote in 2005 that homosexuality was a strong tendency ordered toward an intrinsic moral evil. So it's just really the usual song by the Catholic Church. So my comment here is, why would it matter if they are gay and they're celibate anyway, right? So they have this rule that you have to be 3 years that you're not a practicing homosexual.
Well, here's a deeper fear of mine. So if they think they're gay and they keep the gays out, is that going to stop the pedophiles from sexually molesting little children in the church and younger clergy?
Yeah.
Which I think is a disturbing thing, because it's proven that pedophiles and homosexuals are two different people.
Yes,
usually.
That's true. Well,
so,
they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my question, is he think that if he cuts the homosexuals coming down into the church, he'll cut out on all the cases of pedophilia and sexual abuse by clergy? So that's my stance on this, is like, is that what he's thinking?
Yeah, I guess the mere fact that homosexuality for him is really just abhorrent and he just thinks it's evil, and you know, it's really backward. I don't think that anything he thinks is based on fact. And also, I knew someone before who was in a seminary, but he was openly gay, and he was a practicing homosexual, I guess. But he was in a seminary. I was surprised. He lived in Virginia. Yeah. Oh, God, I knew him back in, 2001.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of practicing homosexuals in the Catholic Church, so.
Yeah, or they've been suppressed for a long time, and then when they got into church, and they just become all out. So, yeah.
Well, I don't think that's it. I think, like, I know several priests that are openly gay. They have boyfriends, and they go about living a life. They don't do the whole celibate thing, but they're also not out raping little children and stuff. But
oh yeah,
you know, so it, you know, it goes both ways. So, but I mean, this is the Catholic Church. It's not going to change overnight.
Oh no, not at all. It's be said that it has to happen that way. But I guess Pope Benedict is kind of backpedaling for how he accepts the gays.
Yes. So
are you okay? Anyway, okay. So next news.
Okay.
So
all right. So we just entered Pride Month, and I want to talk about some gay history under the gay subject. And there's also, and this came up with a book that's just been released, but I want to talk about what actually happened. Everybody acts like the first time gays were shot at or killed were in Pulse in Orlando. And it's not. The earliest known attack like this happened actually in New Orleans. So in 1973, an arsonist killed 32 people at a gay club. And why is history shrugged? To those who loved the upstairs lounge, it was kind of a paradise, a gay club that doubled as a church. It was sanctuary in 1970 New Orleans at a time when homosexuality was considered sufficient grounds for deportation, in a city where assaulting gay people was sport for college fraternities, and local ordinances made it unlawful to rent or sell homes to sex perverts. It was a place of assured discretion and warm, easy brotherhood. The bartender kept a microphone behind the bar to announce regulars by name, a la Ed McMahon. If you were new, you were honey or sweetheart. On Sundays, you could pull up a pew in the morning and return in the evening for $2 bottomless beer night that drew more than 100 people, from longshoremen to doctors to a hustler who went by Napoleon and dressed the part. At 2 p.m., the bar would open and an extended family of lovers, exes, strays would begin to gather in the lofted rooms around a white baby grand whose keys were worn from use. It was where the men prayed and played and danced in the drag review. And on the night of June 24th, 1973, just shy of 8 p.m., with the sun yet to set, it was where they died. 31 men and one woman perished in an arson fire, the largest mass killing of gay people in this country until 2016 Pulse nightclub shooting. They included ministers, veterans, trust fund kids, and fathers of young children. Many were veterans. Almost all were closeted. The arsonist was never caught, but was suspected to be a patron enraged at being thrown out of the bar for fighting. Newspapers scarcely covered the tragedy. The police investigation was cursory. Even among local historians, there was a stubborn, inexplainable resistance. It says something profound that in a natural storytelling community, one of the stories remained off limits. Fessel writes, some survivors were adamant that their pain should not be politicized. The upstairs lounge was not a gay rights tragedy, nor did it ever play a part in any gay rights movement, one told him. It should never be used to promote a cause. Fessel examines how the tragedy was covered, or more usually ignored, tracing newsroom's attitudes towards homosexuality and the euphemisms used in a report on gay life. A popular place on Sundays was a common way to refer to gay bars, implying that the brisk business on the Lord's Day put an establishment at odds with Christian values.
That's a lot. Okay.
So, I mean, that's it. It's talking about this bar that people that was set on fire and 32 people died in it. And how it was kind of totally ignored back in 1973, which is kind of interesting that in 1968 was when the stole, was it 1968? Yeah, 1968. Or 67, when was it? Or 68, I think, was the Stonewall Riots. So this was just a few short years after that this happened. And nobody ever kind of blinked an eye about it.
It was June 28, 1969, the Stonewall Riots.
Stonewall, okay, so that's 68, 69. I knew it was after I was born, that's why they did it. So yeah. They were paving the way for me.
It took a few days, June 28th to July 1st is where the riots are, right?
Yeah.
So. All right, so what I think about this, though, is maybe it was not covered because it was about a patron who got thrown out, who started the fire. That's
what they're saying the police report says.
That's right.
If you read the other history on it, it says that it was done by the Klan and other groups, so... But the reason I brought this up because there's this guy's by Robert Fessler. He's written this book called Tinderbox, The Untold Story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation. So it talks about New Orleans, which currently New Orleans is very gay friendly, from what I can tell. From the times.
No way. Yeah, it is. Yeah. So I wonder where this upstairs lounge is, though. So. I don't think it's in Bourbon Street, though. It might be somewhere else.
So.
Yeah, so they... it's not like somebody came in with guns. Somebody burned the place.
But somebody set the place on fire with people in it.
Somebody burned the place, yeah. An arsonist came in and did that. So people got trapped and everything. So that's really sad. But then I guess the difference between that, of course, with with Pulse, it's really, it was murder. It was a guy with a gun and shooting people, shooting everyone. So, yeah. Gosh.
Yeah, but back then, that would have been a true tragedy. That would have been something that made the papers if they'd shot him.
No, oh, what do you mean? The one, if they, if it was, if it
if
was
they'd actually walked in and started shooting it up. I mean, a fire, they're like, it was on 141 Chartreuse Street in the French Quarter.
Oh, Chartreuse, okay. So, okay, so by the looks of this, so, for one thing, back in 1973, there was no really quick mass media, or there was no internet. So probably
but the media didn't cover it. I mean, that's what they talked about. The media totally ignored it because it was a gay bar, and because of how they treated homosexuality. So that was 73. I was alive in 73.
I wasn't born yet.
Shut up, Maynard. but for a lot of us, I mean, the privileges and stuff we enjoy now are just a recent thing. So that's why I wanted to bring this up since it's Pride Month. Mm-hmm. And talk about it is because, you know, literally 30 years ago, or actually 40 years ago now, going to a gay bar, you took your life in your own hands.
Yep.
Well, it was a lot scarier than it was now that, you know, until Pulse happened. So.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So tell us what y'all think. I mean, yep, check out the book. And stuff. And the link's on the Gay Geek Bazaar Facebook webpage, so you can read the whole article. So,
okay. All right. Let's go to the geek. This was last week's story. Oh, yeah. By the way, everyone. Yeah, we took a break last week because it was the holidays. So, yeah. I just forgot to mention at the top of the show that we took a break because it's been busy. We had a Memorial weekend. That's why. All right, so California debuts digital license plates, and here's what it'll cost you. It's kind of expensive. So California's dramatic new license plate is hitting the streets. A digital display board that allows changeable messages controlled by the driver or remotely by fleet managers. The new plates are the same computer technology as Kindle e-book readers, along with a wireless communication system. They come with their own computer chips and battery. Motorists who choose to buy the plate can register their vehicles electronically and eliminate the need to physically stick tags on their plates each year. They also may be able to display personal messages. I don't think you can do profanity, though, if the DMV decides to allow that. Yeah. So if the car is stolen, the plate's manufacturer says the plate can tell the owner and police exactly where the car is, or at least where the license plate is if it has been detached. California, which has been quietly prepping its rollout this year, is the first state to try out the new plates. The State Department of Motor Vehicles is conducting a pilot project with the Bay Area company Reviver Auto, which makes the plate and is about to begin marketing it for sale at auto dealerships. Wow, it's going to be a big money maker. So last week, Sacramento became the first city to agree to the test plates, taking a shipment of 24 plates for its in-house vehicle fleet. So the technology comes with a high price, though. However, it has already prompted questions about privacy and safety. So dealerships are expected to sell the plates for $699, but not including installation costs. Users must also must pay a monthly fee of $7. See, I don't think it's worth it anymore. So the plates are not available through the DMV. Some drivers are questioning whether the device communications system could allow the state, the police, or private companies to track a driver's movements. In a recent blog posting, Alex Roy, an editor of the Drive website, raised those and other questions. What little privacy we have left is annihilated, he wrote. This makes sense for the fleet management. For my personal car, no thanks. For my personal car, no thanks. So Neville Boston, founder of Reviver Auto, said he expects initial interest to come from companies and for their vehicle fleets. Some businesses will use them as mini billboards to advertise their products or services, he said. but will be able to do so only when the vehicle is stopped. The license plate number will still appear at the on the screen when messages pop up, but it will be smaller and tucked into a upper right corner of the screen. So I guess this is a good money maker, and I don't think private people would really like to have this, but it would be good for companies like maybe UPS or USPS or whoever.
Oh no, I think there are some vain people in California that would pay, that have the money to pay for that, sir, pay for that, and would do it.
Yeah, it's gonna be like a status quo, like an iPhone.
Yeah.
Driving around with an expensive plate, and it's gonna be like a show off thing, and you know, they probably program the license plate to show some fancy design. So it's e-ink, so it's got to be black and white. Probably it's the same as Kindles, but anyway, maybe if I ever go to California, I'll get to see people driving around with this. Probably some rich kid.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe the driverless Uber cars will have them.
If this was cheaper, though, Ray, would you get one? Let's say, you know, it's a regular, it became the standard, or not the standard, let's say it's a little bit cheaper. Let's just say a lot cheaper, and there's no subscription fee. Let's say it's at par or cheaper than what we have right now. But, of course, they can detect where you are. People can locate where your car is. So what do you think, Ray? Would you get one of these?
I don't know. We'd have to see. I think the technology's got to go a little bit further for me.
Yeah, but you're talking about giving up some of your privacy because it is.
Well, I give up some of my privacy anyhow. I walk around with a cell phone in my pocket all the damn time. Anybody can track wherever I'm going, any point of time, and they say they can't, but you can.
So you're saying it doesn't matter anyway? Because okay. So privacy is not a concern regarding the license plate.
No.
License plate regarding this. Yeah. It's kind of moot because we carry our own phones. I see what you're saying. I mean, that's a reasonable reason why you would.
And most new cars have phones built into them so they can be tracked anyhow with alarm systems and everything. So
that's just sacrifice what little privacy just to make it fancy and, you know, more manageable.
Yeah.
Expensive though, $700. All right, let's go to the next story, Ray.
Okay, scientists have 3D printed the most advanced artificial cornea ever using human cells. Scientists have 3D printed the thin protective film over the eye called the cornea using human cells, and it's the most advanced version of an artificial cornea yet. Should the technology improve, it could help millions of people see again. It was tricky to find the right recipe for an ink that's thin enough to squirt through a 3D printer's nozzle, says Shay Cannon, a tissue engineer at Newcastle University who is one of the creators of the artificial cornea. This is bio ink, just didn't have to be thin. It had to be stiff enough that it could hold the shape as a 3D structure. To get the right consistency, the researchers added a jelly-like goo called alginate and stem cells extracted from donor corneas, along with some ropey proteins called collagen. The cornea is the first lens light passes through before eventually hitting the retina at the back of the eye. Damage to the cornea from injury or infection can distort vision or even lead to blindness. Right now, the damaged corneas are replaced with healthy ones from deceased donors, but there aren't enough donated corneas to go around. Nearly 5 million people around the world are blind because infection scarred their corneas, according to the World Health Organization. The new technique described today in the Journal of Experimental Eye Research doesn't completely eliminate a need for cornea donors. Those are key for making the stem cell part of the recipe. But using this technique, the donation goes a lot farther, Cannon says. Instead of replacing one damaged cornea with one healthy one, you could grow enough cells from the one donated cornea to print all 50 artificial ones. To figure out what exactly to print, the team also had to figure out the shape of a human cornea. So the researchers used a special camera to image a volunteer's eyeball and create a 3D model of their cornea. Then the team fed that template into a 3D printer, which squirted the bio ink into a supportive bed of jello to create the cornea. The result looks like a soft contact lens and a bath of goo. But there's still a long way to go before these artificial corneas will ever get close to a human eyeball. Cannon wants to fine-tune the process first. He says, and the artificial cornea will also need to go through safety studies in animals. But this study is proof that you can 3D print something that looks like a cornea. and it contains mostly the same ingredients. It's also the first time researchers have recreated a cornea's distinctive curved shape. Kenna says that the key for the artificial cornea to work, without the shape, you don't have a cornea, you have something else. So this is kind of good. I mean, this is really starting to push 3D printing now and what you can do with it. What do you think about, I think this is pretty interesting that we can actually push the what 3D printing can do now with doing artificial organs and stuff, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. This is something interesting that you can do 3D printing now for body parts now.
Yeah.
And human eyeball even. It's just amazing that, this advanced technology on especially eyes that... the question, though, is does it need to be... 3D printed from cells from you?
They need stem cells from a cornea to recreate it. And they said, based on the study, you can, from one cornea, they can get enough stem cells to do 50 corneas, yeah. 3D yeah, printed so, corneas. So it would make it a lot more available for people to do that, for people yeah. to have more transplants and stuff. So that's good to know that this is coming around. And I also thought since we watched
Upgrade.
I was just watching Upgrade last night. The wife was joking about, "Hey, I'm going to print a pizza."
Yeah, that's right.
So print
pizza.
So she prints pizzas instead of corneas. So
yeah. All right. So it's interesting because 3D modeling can do this already, and I hope it keeps advancing. And other parts of the body.
Yeah.
You don't have to harvest cadavers. Just probably get. Grow your own or
yeah
so which goes back to growing things. It's pretty much a geek topic. Have you heard of clean meat?
No.
Clean meat is actually the concept of clean meat is really growing your own meat without animals. It's really the muscle, because when you eat meat it's really the muscle, right?
Yeah.
That's why it's got grains. It's it's a muscle. Yeah. But if you can grow it, probably not necessarily 3D printing that we talked about, but it's something.
Yeah.
That
we talked about the hamburger meat that somebody's growing a petri dish and stuff, and they're like, "Oh, it tastes okay, but there's no fat, so it doesn't have that juicy flavor to it."
Yeah. So, what I think. So that is true. That is true. So what do? You add more fat or do something to make it more juicy. But, they can reproduce fat. What if they start reproducing fat using those, not just the muscle, but also the fat?
Well, that's cool, too. Then you could 3D print your ribeye whenever you want it.
That's right.
So.
Yeah. So, yeah, I went to cleanmeat.com, and it's really interesting that they have these. And I was listening to another podcast called Star Talk, and they interviewed a guy who actually wrote the book on clean meat, and it's interesting that they can make really good steaks or burgers or stuff like that, but they're all grown from a lab.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Yeah, I personally can't wait to have that. Because it's not meat, it's meat, but it was not from an animal. It may have it did not involve killing an animal. It's just
But is it organic and non-GMO?
It would be GMO. It would be that organic anymore because you grew it. Well, for one thing, it's gonna be cleaner because it was not raised in a farm, and it's in a sterile lab, so there's no bacteria from poop. There's no poop involved. There's no there's no hairs.
Well, there's poop involved because it's muscle, and muscle gives off waste. So.
Oh no! I read about this. There's no waste. There's no waste because you really grew the muscle, so there's no poop at all. There's no animal. There is no animal involved. It's just really grown muscle from a lab. So. Would you eat this? I mean, if it's out in the market or.
I might give it a try once and see what it tastes like.
Yeah, I would think it would be the same. Maybe not. I'm not sure. All right, let's go to the next one. Let's go to Bizarre.
Okay.
Can I take this?
Yeah.
Okay. So Roach laid egg in Tallahassee man's ear. Gross. Oh my God, I remember my dad having an ant walk into his ear, and it was freaking him out. So for 3 years, Blake Collins and his husband Samuel McGee, oh, they're a gay couple, are they? Blake Collins and husband Samuel McGee? So have been fighting a roach invasion in their apartment near Florida State University. Oh, they're roommates. Okay. Oh, it is. They are husbands. Sorry, they are husbands. They're in an apartment. So they're crawling on our bed sheets. They're crawling on our mattress, Collins said. They'd come out of the light bulb sockets, a bowl with dog food, would shortly attract dozens of German roaches. Collins once stayed up to pick roaches off McGee as he was sleeping, recovering from surgery, he said. But last week, the pest problem reached its peak. Collins woke up at 5 a.m. to a roach rustling inside his ear. Oh, gross. A roach was burrowing inside of my head, he said. I could hear his legs inside me. It felt like someone was shoving a Q-tip all the way inside my ear, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. He went to the hospital, where a doctor used a syringe to put lidocaine, a numbing medication, inside his ear to kill the roach, which also had laid an egg. I know. Ugh. I heard it die in my head, Collins said. And when he poured the lidocaine in, I could feel him go super, super fast, kicking and trying to dig its way out, and a faint little squeal, and then 2 minutes later, it just stopped and he died. He was discharged from the Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare with home care instructions from emergency room physician Dr. Michael Glaze. Collins, 25, a local manager at a store in the Governor's Square Mall, said the pest control inside began when they moved into the campus walk complex. For the past several months, they submitted several pest control requests, which they said were immediately acted upon. The fact that she left the roach problem go on as was a neglect, and I have suffered a personal injury, he said about the manager. The manager and corporate office did not return requests for comment. Bugs crawling and dying in your ear. That's something that happens to corpses, not human beings, Collins said. It's gross. Collins and McGee broke their lease early and are now moving into a new apartment. It's amazing, he said. It would be amazing. What kind of a comment is that? Well, I guess it's amazing because it's got roaches in its ear a roach in its ear.
Well, the fact is that they're living in an apartment that the roaches are that bad in, so there's an issue.
Yeah. So I was telling a story earlier. There was an ant that was crawling in my dad's ear one time, and he was panicking because the ear was crawling right inside. He could feel it's walking inside his ear. It was just an ant, a lone ant. So I remember my dad was telling me what I had to do was shine a flashlight on his ear, so it would attract the ant to crawl out because it could see from the outside, and it did eventually, and we caught the ant.
Why didn't you just pour water in there so it would swim out and get out of his ear?
Well, my dad had a stroke, so moving around is not really that easy. But he can feel everything. He used to feel everything. So, yeah. Anyway, okay. So
moving on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. A man allegedly smelled so terrible his flight had to make an emergency landing.
How was your flight then when you had the emergency landing, Larry?
Human bodies are beautiful. Flawed ecosystems filled with millions of tiny microbes and bacteria, all mixing and swirling and dancing delicate dances inside our guts. Remember Osmosis Jones? Unfortunately, our bodies are not precise, finely tuned machines. They're not perfect. And they periodically do gross things like, you know, randomly smell like weed sometimes. This is normal. And yet, there are times now and then when a perfect storm of microbes inside a body create a reaction that produces a smell that is so bad, so heinous, so brutally awful that all other smells pale in comparison. This week, an unfortunate man on a Dutch flight reportedly suffered that kind of rare BO fate and managed to reek so bad that the flight had to make an emergency landing, the UK's Mirror reports. There's no ordinary body odor. there was some kind of chemical weapons grade stench. Unnamed man was on his way from Amsterdam to the Spanish island of Gran Canaria, where he is sent probably overwhelms the Transiberia Airlines cabin so horribly that the fellow passengers started yakking. Others fainted, their own bodies apparently deciding that the only way to deal with the smell was to slip into the sweet embrace of unconsciousness. It was like he hadn't washed himself for several weeks, a passenger named Piet Van Hawk told the Mirror. Several passengers got sick and had to puke. The flight crew, not knowing what to do, reportedly tried to usher the guy into an airplane bathroom in hopes that it would quarantine the smell, but the frail laboratory accordion doors were no match for the Herculean smell. As passengers retched and blacked out, the pilot decided there was only one thing left to do, and the plane made an emergency stop in southern Portugal to unload the said stinky man. Transavia's official statement said the flight made its emergency landing because of medical reasons, but an airport spokesman conceded to the Mirror that it is indeed right that he smelled quite a bit. It is unclear if the smelly guy ever did make it to his final island destination or if he was dipped into a Lysol bath by Portugal Airlines security and banished back to Amsterdam. But in any case, he should probably take a long, hard look at his diet and bathing regimen before flying again.
Yeah, he must have been smoking a lot of pot and ate some asparagus and drank some black coffee. And it was just really reeking and probably did not shower at all. Oh, yeah.
I have times of the year I go through where my feet stink so bad, it's ridiculous. And it's not all the time. It's just like in the fall and in the early spring. Depending on what kind of shoes I wear, my feet will reek and they will make your nose hairs burn.
Oh, God.
And it was really bad when I was a teenager. Oh, my God, it was so bad when I was a teenager. No matter what I did, I could put on new shoes and wear them, and that you'd go take them off when I got home. They'd stink so bad you'd have to sit them outside. So.
But you put? Did you ever, like, put powder?
Or yeah, something? Nothing worked. It was something. It's some chemical in my body that during the spring and the fall that it goes through, and it just, especially if they're leather loafers and stuff like business shoes, so yep. I have to kind of watch what shoes I buy to wear in the fall and in spring, because they will reek like no tomorrow. So
gross.
So yeah, all right.
I never got to I don't know. I guess I've been lucky that I haven't really stunk that bad. But there are certain kind of shoes. I remember I had the penny loafers before, and I would wear it without socks, or maybe I did. I can't remember. It's been so long. No, I think they're Sperry topsiders.
Yeah.
And I would wear them, and it would stink. Yeah, I remember back then, but I guess it's because of the leather.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Anyway, all right. What we're saying.
All right. I want to talk about something real quick. That I'd like for hopefully listeners to comment on by next weekend. I posted an article from Queerty on the Facebook Gay Geek Bazaar page, and Sex Club comes under fire after charging vastly different admission prices for tops and bottoms.
Oh, wow.
Anonymous is a sex party for guys in Brooklyn. After the smashing success of its first event over the Black Party weekend last month, the party is returning for a second outing on June 2nd. Organizers are charging $65 entry for bottoms, but just $25 for tops. So, y'all read the article and let us know what you think. And please post your comments on Facebook or call and leave us a voice message, because we'd like to talk about your responses to that on the show next week.
Oh, wow.
So, I thought that was a good topic. And I wanted to put it in the Gay and Geek Bazaar, but I was like, you know, I really want to see what other people think and try to get some comments on it. So, it's on the Facebook page. Go check it out. Read it. Leave us your comments. Leave us a phone message or send us an email. Either which way you want to do it.
$25 for top, $65 entry for bottom.
You're wow. An expensive bottom. It's expensive for bottoms, Mater. It's almost like you're a girl and you have to spend more money on clothes and makeup and all this other stuff just to get a cheap-ass man.
That's kind of discrimination, right? It's a form of discrimination, right?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
So. All right. Okay, so I guess that's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Belated memorial. Happy memorial to everyone, because, we took a break for 2 weeks. And we'll be back next week. So special thanks to Caesar for the great articles on Facebook. That's facebook.com/gaygeekbazaar. So if you want to contact us, send your emails to show@gaygeekbazaar.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail on 281-947-2327. That's 281-947-2327. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're on Google iPlanes, Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio.
Yes, go to the official website. The official website is gaygeekbazaar.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Bye.